I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hello everyone, my name is Rebecca Kelly and you're listening to the Everywhere We Go podcast. This week's episode sees the return of Marguerite Penrose and we are joined by our good pal, Julie Hannah. We chat through our time when we worked together in Ryanair Direct. Ryanair Direct stands out as one of our career highlights. Not only did it give us the tools and the training, but it set us on the path we find ourselves today. More importantly, it gave us long-lasting friendships, relationships and memories, to which there are many of. From getting shot in the eye on a Halloween night out to Michael O'Leary coming to the rescue of a hysterical colleague, we chat through some of the characters we worked with and some of the press trips that resulted in vegetable attacks and cracked windows. This week's podcast is dedicated to our dear friend Kenneth. You will always be in our memories. When we talk about you, it brings us together. True you, we will always be us. There was no better workplace like Ryanair Direct, unless there was. Everywhere we go, people want to know who we are and where we come from. And we're from
Ryanair Direct.
Let's explain Ryanair Direct. First of all, where was it and what was it?
Well, Ryanair Direct was the reservation centre initially for Ryanair. And it was based on Cunningham Road in Dublin 8.
Which is near Phoenix Park, for anyone who doesn't know it.
Yeah, just facing the Phoenix Park.
It was three floors. The lower floor, which was admin and ticketing and training.
Yeah.
And then it was the fourth floor of reservations.
And that's where the manager's offices and all were.
Oh, it did go up to the third floor.
Yeah,
but it was only a small...
It was only... That's where...
Need a hotel
and everything were. Yeah.
And they were in there. I got in there from you, Julie. You got me a job in there.
Yeah.
And Mags, how long were you there before I was there?
I started in 99.
Right.
Because I'm that old. So I actually got in from a friend of mine, Lorna. She was working there at the time and I was doing a travel and tourism course and I absolutely hated it because I stupidly thought there'd be nothing to do with geography when I did the course. And I used to travel all the way from Portmarnock to Slorgan for this course. Hated every minute of it. But I was doing airfares and ticketing as part of the course. So Lorna picked me up at the bus stop one night. I was walking by and she was driving by. So she gave me a lift home and she was saying, oh, what are you doing? So I was telling her and she's, oh my God, we're really stuck for ticketing agents in Ryanair. Would you be interested? So I was like, anything to get me out of this course. Now it was near the end. I was getting ready to do exams, but I'd absolutely no faith in myself with these exams. So I said, ah, sure. Why not give us a go? So next minute, like the next day, I got a phone call. Hi, yeah, I believe you're interested in working for us. Would you like to come for an interview? So I was like, oh God, I feel sick. So it was a Friday, so I went for my interview. Now, no, normally you had to start in reservations with Ryanair.
Yeah.
And you had to be a year in reservations before you're allowed to be promoted. But of course, Mags wasn't. So I actually went straight into the ticketing department. So that's kind of how I started, I suppose, back then.
Julie, your story?
I was in Cloisteída in college and Ryanair came in to do interviews. And I think there was a few of us that got jobs from that interview. Then I just went into reservations, into the call centre. I did finish out the college and I did my exams. It was the travel and tourism course in Cloisteída. Mm-hmm. And Ryanair came in and did do the interviews with us. And
then
I got
the job. Who else was in that class?
Oh, that got jobs.
Yeah, Kenneth.
There was myself, Kenneth, Veronica. That's all I can remember that from that class right now. Actually, no, there was Suzanne. I can't remember her second name now. I think she's still in travel as well.
Like Michelle.
There I don't think Michelle was in college with us. Okay. I don't recall her being in college with us. I think Michelle might have started after me, maybe. I'm not 100% certain, but I know a few of us started. And then obviously you had to do your 4 weeks in training. Mm. So we went in and it was like, I think it was 4 weeks we had to do in training.
Yeah. Yeah, 4 weeks. It was really intense, actually.
Yeah, the training.
Learning all the codes.
Yeah, and I'd obviously been doing that, but then it was learning their system and how to sell things and different things like that downstairs in the little ticketing room.
I got the job through you, Julie. Mm-hmm. So... I think you just said to me this job. I followed Julie everywhere, so I followed her.
Stalker.
Yes, to Sheffield, to Ryanair, to Thomas Cook. I literally followed her everywhere.
Yeah.
And I remember the interview process, and I think it was with Antoinette and Richard. Maybe I don't think so. Definitely Antoinette, and they literally in the interview. And me 19-year-old self, I think, she handed me a pen. And told me to sell it back to her.
Oh yeah, that's what that was their.
That was their
thing,
wasn't it?
Yeah, the pen.
Yeah.
You had to sell the pen, and then I got the job. But you had to pass the training, wasn't it?
Yeah. After 4 weeks, you had to do a test. Actually,
you had to do it. And if you didn't, and people did fail that test, and you didn't get
people
jobs.
Left even after the first day. Yeah. A lot of times.
But I remember Antoinette saying to me, "Rebecca, have you got a brother called Barry?" And I was like. And she was like, I used to go out with him. And I was oh God. I was like,
I never knew that.
Yeah, she used to go out with Barry.
That's mad.
Or she had a date with him or something. Yeah. But I remember the way she was saying it to me. It wasn't that it ended well.
You were like, I'm not getting the job.
I was like, I'm gone. I'm literally dead. Do you know what I mean? But the 4 weeks training and then we got the job.
Do you remember your first day? Taking a live booking when you weren't in training.
Horrific.
Oh my God. Absolutely horrendous.
Oh, you'd be the terrified, sweat. Like, because the person would be ringing you, like, and you have to make this booking, like, you know, and
send them somewhere.
Send them somewhere, like, am I booking the right thing? Is this the right code? And I don't think there would have been, like, drop downs and all, like,
there is now.
Like, you had to know the code and put the code in correctly.
Yeah,
like,
and there's always someone listening.
That was always
somebody listening.
I remember the sweat, and they told us, you know, the not ready button as well.
Yeah.
You can't use that. Oh my God, my finger was on it every 3 seconds in my first booking. I was like, I'm not ready for this. Help me, you know.
So we had the screen, and the calls would come in, and you'd get the beep, and you'd take the call. Yeah. But yeah, you had your not ready button that we used to use all the time, and they pulled you up on
Julie used it for you as well.
Only if you're getting more bookings than me.
It's very competitive, that one.
So we had, because we'd a list, and we'd write down our bookings.
I don't know how, like, this is obviously because technology isn't as advanced or is a lot more advanced now than what it was, because we definitely had to write our bookings down on a sheet and hand in your sheet at the end of the day.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Your references.
You'd be sitting there at 11 o'clock, you're on shift from 9 or 8 and you'd sit beside Julie Hannett and you'd be on
she was 6 wagon.
Or 7 or maybe even 12, you're having a flying morning and then
and
all
this
of a sudden,
one would be going mad. Yeah.
Going mad, and then it dies and you're like, Jesus, it's dead, and you're looking at her and she's taking calls left, right and centre and you're like, what is going on? And you're going, is the screen right? Yeah, the screen right. And you look down and someone's at the point, I'm not ready. Yeah,
someone, I wonder who.
She said it all the time to me.
And me as well. I mean, you must have picked on us, the pair of us.
Well, you shouldn't have stepped aside, you didn't.
Are there, and then I remember a late, she was particularly bad on late as well, because he'd go in. Did we start at 4 on a late?
No, 11 till 8, I think, 11, was it?
Yeah. I thought there was a 12 to 9 as well.
Oh, there was a 12 to 9.
She's right, 12 to 9, say. We were on that shift and it always went dead for about an hour or so. I think
4 o'clock.
You know, that way. And then people would be having their tea. But once after 6 o'clock, Wednesday, you are flying it.
Yeah.
Absolutely flying it. So she'd be looking at your sheet. So I'd try and keep my sheet away from her when I copped on what she was up to. And she'd be like, you 25 bookings. I have you 25 bookings. I was like, oh, I don't know. I must have just had a grand run of it. You wouldn't even be looking, like normal people wouldn't be looking. This one Hawkeye beside me. All right, now you're going to have to go on not ready. And I was like, I can't. I'll get into trouble. So she's just, no, you won't. I promise. So I'd be like, no, I'm not. And then I'd turn around to do something. And like, as you said, the not ready button, she'd slide on. So you wouldn't even notice. And I'd be like, God, Julie's flying it now. She's, I'm not getting any. There's no beeps coming through to me. Then you'd look down after 20 minutes or half an hour and there's not ready booking or putting the shining in your eyes.
I know. Yeah. You were awful for it.
Yeah.
But like the reason as well was that, yeah, okay, there was in a team, there was a team leader, a supervisor, and a team of 10, 12 maybe. And then it was quite competitive in that you had a target to reach and you had obviously your commission. So I do remember, you can correct me, that any Ryanair heads out there can correct me if I'm wrong. It was 25 pence a booking. It was 150 for an insurance policy and it was €5.
Oh, the car hire.
The car hire was huge.
And you got at least, I remember one day nearly getting 6 or 7 cars.
I know, the car hire was really hard to do. Do you remember?
Yeah,
because it would take you had 20 minutes to work it out.
Yeah, because you'd be terrified. Am I selling this correct? Have I got the collision damage waiver correct?
And
have
the price of car hire back then, it was about £500 a day. I was like, oh my God, this person must be loaded.
Yeah.
And I always remember in the UK, all the UK customers, because that's the majority in UK and Irish, and like the names of kids always stuck in my head. Maximilian. How many Maximilians did I book in? I'm totally fascinated. But yeah, if you got a car hire, you were literally crying with the going, oh my God, what will I buy myself now when I get paid?
Well, we had no bills. Like,
no,
we know.
Sure, we're absolutely loaded. If somebody said, oh, will we go to London or will we go to New York? Yeah, sure, book us on. There was no I'll have to save. Like, we didn't know the meaning of that back then.
What was the folder called? The Interline folder, was it?
Oh,
where
you
used to look what agreements had we got with different
with
airlines
everybody.
And stuff.
And then the other crowd came in as well. So there was Need a Hotel, there was car hire and insurance. Need a Hotel, we definitely got money off them, but then they started to bring their own call. Andrew brought his own call centre. Where he started.
Oh, that's
would
mad.
You believe that? Yeah, that's where he said John McGibbon. Do you remember John McGibbon?
Yeah.
They started there
that's
as well.
Crazy.
In Need
because
a Hotel.
They used to give us they used to do an odd incentive as well, where they would give us like free hotel nights and stuff like
that. There was loads
we
of prizes.
We traveled the world and we stayed in the top hotels.
I know, and
all
the best
down
crack.
Down to the, like, absolutely the best crack.
All hungover.
But we were
majority
of the time.
Yeah.
It was
wild.
It was just great fun. I said all the different teams and teams were competitive.
Yeah.
And then like it's be sitting there taking the calls. And then at one point I remember then they were looking for a supervisor, seniors. They were called seniors.
Seniors, yeah.
And we interviewed and myself and yourself, we got it. Do you remember? We got
it.
I think I was in admin at that
point. You were admin. You were, you were sitting
when
in
you
your...
started.
Yeah.
Go on, tell the story, Julie.
No, well, Mags is just one of the posh ones that sat at the little four desk. She wasn't a peasant in the cross centre.
But I remember it. And then I think, and bringing it back to your podcast, Mags, that I did think that someone did tell me that you and Kira were twins. And I was like going, okay, help. I was like, I'm not going to ask, but I'm just going to go along with it. But and then, because Kira, your sister, worked there too.
Yeah, Kira did. So I basically started... And Kira and I had loads of the same jobs as well. It's gas. But I had started in Ryanair. But I remember starting there. First of all, when I got the airline job, my mom thought this was the greatest thing since sliced bread, because to get an airline job back then was virtually impossible. Yeah. I actually interviewed for Aer Lingus and Ryanair in the same week, went for the Aer Lingus interview. Oh God, the one that interviewed me was an absolute wagon. I was petrified. But it was a really tough interview anyway. Yeah. So I did it and I said, it's done anyway. And I said, I didn't get that job. So I came home. Then I did the Ryanair one on the Friday. So mum was like, how do you think that was? I was like, it wasn't too bad. You know, they were nice. They were friendly. So I remember then Aer Lingus rang me. Excuse me. They knew quality. Aer Lingus rang me on the Monday. And during the interview, when I was talking to this lady, she told me she was going to be my manager, right? So I was like, oh God, I'm afraid of her, right?
Yeah.
And you know, back then as well, like we were all much younger.
Yeah.
So I was like easily intimidated, shall we say. So I was like, oh God, no, I don't know whether she liked me. So she rang me on the Monday and she said, listen, we're delighted to offer you the job. So I was like, oh, thanks a million. So we said, I did go for another position elsewhere. So she said, grand, we'll give you to the end of the week to decide. So I was like, oh, that's great. So then Ryanair, I think, rang me the next day and they were like, oh, we're delighted to offer you the position. So even though that was miles away, in Dublin 8, and Aer Lingus was up in the airport, which was so handy for me, I was like, oh, you're grand. I'm going to take the Ryanair, definitely. So that's, I felt that was the best for me, because everyone was really friendly. It was like a big family.
It was. And we were all so young.
But when we first started, Rebecca, I know I got a car after a while.
Oh, yeah. That car was our saviour.
Yeah, but we didn't, we got two buses to work every day.
I got two buses and a train.
Yeah.
I would hate when they put me on a different shift to you. I would hate it.
How will I get to work?
So on that note, let's talk about The Cinquecento? Was it a Cinquecento?
No,
what
it was a white...
Ford Fiesta?
It wasn't a Ford Fiesta. I don't actually know the name of it. It was like a Cinquecento, but it wasn't...
I had a Seicento, but it wasn't
It wasn't one of them. It was a Fiat... Scudo or Scubo, you'd have to Google it. I think it was a Fiat Scubo, the Tweety Mobile,
that ran on two wheels with this mad crazy driver.
So we'd go from Coolock on the M50 over.
Well, depending on what shift we were. I'd collect Darren. Yeah. Sometimes I'd collect Michelle.
Well, I'd love her.
And the
everybody.
Car would actually be full.
Yeah.
Because if you and Paul were in work. Probably not.
No, I don't
probably
think so.
But I wasn't going through town.
I know, yeah.
So there would have been myself, Rebecca, Paul, Darren, Michelle, Kenneth.
Yeah.
So obviously we all wouldn't be on the same shift, but they would have been the people that would have mostly got a lift with me. You know what I mean?
Yeah. There's a couple of things that kind of stand out in my mind. Is one, the time we hit black ice. Do you remember we hit black ice?
Oh, yeah.
That was horrific. Nearly dead.
I can imagine the
drama. No, we were very nearly dead, Rebecca, in fairness. But, like, it was just the car spun out and we hit the path. Like,
oh, God.
But I can see. I think I drove over to work then.
You did.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah. You did.
But you were reckless. You didn't care. You'd be just like, oh, yeah, no, that was terrible, but let's keep going. Like, she was great like that. She would just get on with it, you know?
And then the time that, Mags, I want you to tell your side of the story.
I can't wait to tell this.
That I was on a different shift, so I think I must be on the 8 o'clock, and you were on either day 11 or day 18.
I think you're on a later because I was in before you.
You came in and you were distraught. What happened?
Well, that was a few years later because I actually had the Fiesta then, the wine Fiesta then.
Never forget.
Yeah. Well, like I'm going to work as you do of a normal day.
Yeah.
And we had heard stories and people had said about the deers in the Phoenix Park.
Because we went through the park.
Yeah. Because how we got to work was we drove the M50 as far as Blanchardstown, go left, down as far as the Castle Knock entrance of the park, in through there, and then we would come out
at Island Bridge.
At Island Bridge. Yeah. But before Island Bridge, there was this straight road which ran parallel to Cunningham Road.
Yeah.
So on that road, I had seen deer running across, and the person in front of me had to jam on their brakes, like, to find the deer.
You know,
and I'm
coming.
Like, oh my God, thank God, like, that person stopped.
Yeah.
Next minute, I literally, like, the deer actually was gone as quick as at anything. And I remember just going, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. I'm a matter hitting a deer. Oh my God, oh my God. I think I just kept driving.
You
I
did.
Don't think I pulled in. I think it was when I got to the gate.
Yeah, and you used to have to wait.
Yeah, you had to wait at the gate to go out.
Yeah, you're right.
And I rang Mags.
Yeah.
I don't even think we had mobiles, did we?
No.
I don't know.
How did you ring me?
You must have.
I must have actually, in order to ring her,
You probably had the Nokia. Yeah.
It was the yellow Nokia thing that you could play Snake on.
Oh,
that was the latest.
God, we sound like we're 105 here. Anyway,
but,
I'm in work.
Yeah. So I rings Mags and
I'm up in my admin desk acting very posh according to Julie. And so my phone's ringing. I was like, oh God, it's Julie. God, I hope she's all right. Because normally, I think you're a little bit late now at this stage. So normally, like, I was like, that's unusual. So answer the phone. Well, it all unfolded. She was hysterical. I was like, Julie, what's wrong with you? So she was like, oh, she was crying and she was talking so fast. I couldn't understand it. So I was like, Julie, you're going to have to calm down. I don't know what's wrong with you. Are you okay? So I finally got Edward that she was after hitting a deer in the park. So I was like, oh, okay, no problem. But let's see. No, my car is ruined. And what about the deer? And you were just so upset and traumatized. So I was like, where are you? So you told me where you were. So I knew it was literally 5 minutes up the road.
Yeah.
So I said, are you okay to come down or will we go up and get you? So you said, no, the car is still running. So... But I'm laughing already. Sorry, dear. Anyway, she said, no, I'll make it down. Meet an underground car park.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, no problem. So I said to a few of the lads, oh, Julie's after hitting the deer. I said, she's on her way. She's very upset. So they're like, oh God. And I was like, yeah, the size of those. And my friend's mom hit a deer years ago in Phoenix Park.
Yeah.
So I remember her telling me about the trauma of it. Mm-hmm. Now, in fairness to Julie, when she was on the phone, she did say to me, what about the deer? What'll happen to him? So I said, listen, don't worry about the deer. I'll sort him out or her. So in my wisdom, don't ask me where it came from. I said, I'll ring the Phoenix Park and ask for the park ranger.
Yeah.
So of course, Mags rings the Phoenix Park anyway and asks to speak to the ranger. He came on the phone, lovely man at the time. So I relayed the story. I said, listen, my friend's really upset. She's after hitting the deer ran off. So she doesn't know whether it's gone to die. It's half dead. We don't know. So then I'm thinking, God, I better not give them our names because we'd have to pay because my friend's mom years ago had to pay an absolute fortune get the deer removed
because
and
you're in their home.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So I'm thinking, how am I going to hang up this call now? Can you trace me, you know? So your mom never asked me anything. So I was like, that's grand. So I got a few of the lads down and we went down to the car park waiting for Julie. Well, I was not ready for what met me. So down she comes down the ramp, okay? And it was all I can say, it was a massacre on the front of her car.
Yeah.
The whole front was smashed in. Julie was still crying, obviously. And then I was like, has she even seen the front of this? Now, when I
I haven't seen the car at this stage because I hadn't got out of the car.
When I say there was chunks of deer stuck in, it was all her headlights were broken and there was bits of deer flesh hanging out. It was like a horror. It would have been great for a movie set, actually.
Yeah.
There was bits of flesh. There was blood. There was everything. The whole front of the car, it looked like she'd smashed into a truck of animals, basically, right?
Oh, my God.
So it was just, I was like, oh, God. And then I was trying to keep myself calm because she was getting out of the car hysterical. The lads were, like, nearly getting sick. They were like, we're not cleaning that. And I said, yeah, you're cleaning it. Here, get buckets of water. Quick, run, you know. And Julie gets out and she's like, oh. And then she saw the car and that was it. She was gone again.
Yeah.
So we were like, don't be worried. Like, her car, like, was her car written off or did you get
repaired? No, it was okay. I actually don't know if you were still there, Rebecca, at the time. Because when it's only now when we're talking about the storm.
Can you remember?
I remember I actually worked in groups at the time. And the reason I remember I worked in groups is because Richard Carey was like, and Paul had said to him, Richard, no jokes today. Now she won't be able to.
She's over the edge now.
She's over the edge because he would have been very funny, you know.
So lovely, Richard.
Apparently they were up there and he was like, can we still get a bit of venison off the car? And all, and apparently Paul had to say, no, today. She won't find it funny today.
But in fairness to you, Julie, like, I mean, if it happened to me, it was, I wasn't prepared. I knew you'd hit the deer and I thought, oh yeah, there's a few bumps and stuff. But this was a full blown massacre. I don't know if that deer couldn't have been alive. But what was on your car?
Like it was the car was wrecked.
I think did the Granger get back onto it?
No, because we didn't leave any evidence. I wasn't telling them who we were because all I was thinking of, God, well, Judy can't afford to pay for a dead deer to be whatever they do with it. And it's endangered, aren't they?
Yeah.
So it probably would have been huge money back then.
I was still there because I remember it. But also when you moved to groups, I think there was probably around 4 months of you being in groups. Yeah. And then I left. I don't know why I left. Oh, yeah, I don't know. I left. We'll talk about that later on why I left.
Flashback.
But let's bring it back to the fact that it was such a young office. It was a vibrant office and the characters. So one, can we talk about herself? She's not here today, but Lynn Holland.
Yeah.
So Lynn.
Barbie girl.
Barbie. And I remember her because she was so glamorous.
Yeah.
So
high heels the lot.
And within a couple of the little skirts on her.
Oh, the long leather jacket.
The Matrix. Oh my God. Yeah.
And the blonde makeup every single day.
And she had eye drops. The first time I've ever seen
eye drops.
But she had these and they made her eyes really blue or something. I don't know what it was. And was it?
And I'll probably all be blind in 20 years.
And she always have the glue to stick to nails.
Because they pop off from time.
And she was
always
so
in good form.
Always laughing.
Yeah.
Always laughing.
Great crack.
But that was, I think I was sent down there for, I think a while, and then they realised I was crap at admin and sent me back up to sales.
I think Lynn did work downstairs in admin when admin moved down.
She could have now. I can't remember exactly. I know she was definitely in reservations and she did move somewhere else.
I think it was admin downstairs. It was either admin or the travel agency support. No.
Oh, I think it was travel agency, actually. We all had to go on that test.
Yeah, I did everything that there was going in Ryanair Direction.
I had 11 years of madness. 8 different jobs.
To be fair, only for the closed, I'd be probably still there now.
I know. Let's again talk through the different characters. So Dickie
Richard.
Oh, he was just so lovely.
He's still a really good pal of mine.
Really?
Yeah.
He's not with Ryanair anymore.
No,
though,
he only left there, was it a year ago?
And he was brilliant at training. And his team.
Amazing person. Such
but when
an amazing
they were
person.
Like, you know, they were like, oh, there's the training team. Like, they were the cool ones. Like, you know, we were cool. Because I think in our little circle, who was there in our circle?
Well, I kind of infiltrated your circle because you already kind of had your own circle. And
well, not really, because when I started, I would have come in from college. So there would have been myself, Kenneth, Veronica.
What about Charlene? Did she not come with you?
No, she came on later, like it wasn't at that time. And then obviously Rebecca and Paul got the job, and then True there then became friends with Darren, which I think probably came from Kenneth's.
Do you know what I mean?
So, and then Lynn.
I don't know how I became friends with you guys, and it must have been Darren and Lynn and everybody.
True. Yeah, I think because you knew everybody, to be fair. Like, you knew everybody. And then I think when I went on to Kieran's team at one point as well, and then you'd have been friends with Kieran.
Yeah, I would have been
Paula
friends with Kieran.
And different things like that. Like, there was actually loads of us. Like, there was. Really was.
Everybody got on. Like, no matter who you were going to lunch, what time lunch you were on, there was always somebody to sit beside at lunch. So it was always... You know, there was our little pockets, but we did all get on. We all had the best crack. Just, I suppose, the crack when you were working was good. Because we did. I know we had lots of fun, but in fairness, we did work hard, like getting those bookings. What did we get? 25 to 30 bookings a day.
And Gemma.
Oh, Gemma was. I love Gems.
Hyacinth.
Yeah, but to this day, I have not met a posher person than Gemma. And was she even that posh? Like, you know.
Probably not.
Oh, she is kind of posh. She was at Dickie's Gone Away party.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
She's I messaged her once or twice on Facebook. She's a little girl now and all. Yeah. She's so funny.
Such a lovely person as well. But Gemma, she was great crack. Yeah.
She used to come up to me and she'd say all things. And then, as I said, the reason I left, I didn't get on with my last team leader. It was just a personality clash. I know you're out there, and I know if we met today, we'd be grand. But it was just a personality clash. That's all it was. But I remember on my last day, because Ryanair used, as I said, they used to listen to your calls.
Yeah.
So they were always listening to your calls. But when there was a rule of thumb that when they got 10, 15 seconds into it and you realised that was a personal call,
you had to end it.
Even though you weren't allowed on a personal call.
But if you were on
it, the law somewhere.
And they caught you on a personal call, they had to hang up because they weren't allowed to listen to their call. And I remember I was on the phone on my very last day and I was down one end and I was doing my calls and Paul rang me and I said, I'll ring you back. And I rang him back after the call and he said, how's it going? And I said, it is what it is. And he said, have you spoken to her yet? And I said, her? I said, I wouldn't even dare speak to her. I said, you know what? She's nothing but an effing. And with that, I just seen Gemma run the length of the call centre.
Oh, up to she was listening.
Oh my God. She was screaming at me. She was like, get off the call. Get off the call. And I was like, what? And she was like, get off the call. And I was like, I'll get off it in a minute, Gemma. I was like, leave me alone. Like, you know. And she was like, you're so bold. Get off the call.
You're so bold.
Yeah. And I was like,
that's real, Gemma.
Yeah. And I was like, would you stop? And she was like, she's listening to you. And I was like,
you were leaving anyway.
Yeah, I was like, oh shit. I was like, okay. And I was like, and then I just kind of snapped to Gemma and I went, well, it's a personal call, so she should have hung up after 15 seconds. But I remember then having to go down. Gemma was like, oh, you're so bold. Anyway, then she's like, you need to go down to the cafeteria because we're going to do your going away part.
And she, after all that.
Yeah, and she came down and she had a present for me and had to give me my present.
Oh.
After me calling her effing. And she heard
a shame.
Yeah. So, like.
But as you said, it was just a personality clash, so
that's all,
you know,
it was just
I can imagine though,
but it was a bit horrific. But Gemma, like, obviously, you know, she was like, you're so bold, get off the call.
But you kind of knew when people were listening, because I remember
I think Dickie
asked me to do it one day to do some of the calls and I was like, oh, I really don't want to be listening in to people, you know. And they had a culture that they had to say they listened to, but I remember when they were listening to you, you could hear an echo. But I remember thinking, oh, that's how you'll know.
Yeah, it was an echo.
If they were listening.
Obviously, with the characters, Mairead Dooleybourne.
Mairead Dooleybourne. MDB.
Do you remember Kenneth Clark? So do you remember the time?
Oh my God, he actually terrorised that woman. He actually really did.
I know. Oh God, stop.
Do you remember he did that when the one of the nights we run the late shift and there was something happening, I don't know what was going on, and over, because you remember he found out how to do that call and the whole office could hear it.
Yeah.
He was going, Dooleybourne.
Over the whole reservation.
Over the whole reservation.
And it was like pitch. It was, I remember it was late.
Dark
November.
Enough. Yeah.
The leaves.
That was a really dark road though back then.
And it was horrible.
Well.
And he'd go, Dooleybourne. Just randomly.
All over. Oh God.
Oh, but she was mad. Like, you know, she was fierce. Great. Like, you know.
Yeah.
What I
mean? Michelle Cosgrove.
Michelle.
Oh, Cosgrove. I'm friends with her for years and never know how to pronounce her surname.
The girl.
Queen of glam.
She never wore the same outfit twice.
Handbags, jewellery, she had it all.
I'd come in with my rugby jersey because we had these green, blue and yellow, wasn't it?
Stripes. Yeah, I think they still
Everybody wanted them. Yeah. They were like highly sought after.
And I think I had two, so I used to like wash them and wear them all the time. But then you'd walk into the office and Michelle would be sitting in front of you because she
the hair and nails, everything,
the hair,
tan.
Yeah. And always, and she's like, hi, hon. Yeah. Always just so lovely as well.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
We had, there were some characters. We travelled the world. We travelled everywhere. And I remember
but we thought it was the world. Like, yeah, it was like Italy and all.
And France and then and all that.
Speaking of Spain or Italy.
Oh, no.
You have to talk about that.
Yeah, which one? The one that she went to?
Julie's first trip away with Rob.
I know.
We went to Genoa. Yeah, but you have to bear in mind, I was like 19 years old. I was 19 years old.
You were so young.
I'd been to Cyprus with the girls.
Yeah.
And I'd been to Gran Canaria with the girls. But this was the first time I was going away with my boyfriend. And
but she's very fussy eater.
We'll
add that in.
Blue tickets. Which ones were confirmed? Yellow?
So let's say what they were. So we'd all...
Yellow were confirmed, blue were standby.
So as part of our... As part of our bonus, throughout the year, we got a blue ticket. And
you got six blue tickets
for a year.
And you got two yellow tickets. Yeah. But the yellow tickets could only be used on new destinations, if I'm correct. You couldn't use them to go to London or anything like that.
No, I don't think. I think you're right.
You had to be used on a new destination.
And what did you say, Max? Blue or what?
Blue were standby
tickets.
So you could give, I could give my blue to my mom or dad
or sell them.
Well,
I'm not
Ryanair anymore. If you girls were coming on the same flight as me, because I was there before you, I would get on the flight before you.
Yeah.
So your date of entry basically determines who got onto the plane first. So it was fine if we were going to London because it was loads of flights, you know, one after the other wasn't too bad. You might have 40 minutes or an hour in between. But if we were going somewhere that there was only one flight, you'd be in a sweat because you'd be like, are we all going to get on?
Yeah.
So it was fine if you knew the flight was empty. So we used to be ringing people to say, oh God, do you know the flight load? Who's on?
Yeah.
So then you kind of got to know other people.
We'd be saying, what's the flight load? And that because you could check
it. So you knew how many tickets were sold. But it was good. Anyway, back to Julie and our trip. I'm not letting this one go.
So anyway, it was the year that Ryanair launched Genoa as a new route.
Yeah.
So whatever year that was this year. And loads of people had gone to Genoa. But loads of people went, actually there was a guy, was it Mike?
Yes.
And him and his partner, do you know who I'm talking about? Him and his partner had gone, and I actually think Paul had gone, and a few different people had gone, but most of them that had gone were a little bit older than me, older than 19.
You were one of the youngest.
Yeah, we would have been the youngest, and so these were kind of like more mature. Now, they were probably only like late 20s, early 30s,
they'd
maybe.
They'd probably been away a good few times.
Yeah, and they could also were away with mostly with people that had a little bit of Italy or a little bit of Italian. So anyway, so a yellow ticket meant though that you were confirmed, but only on that route. So this route was actually only from Stansted to Genoa.
Yeah.
So we flew to Stansted the night before.
Yeah.
My sister came and met us.
Yeah.
We stayed in the airport. We had something to eat. We actually slept on like the benches in the airport because the flight was at, let's say, 5 o'clock in the morning. So there's no point in going anywhere.
Yeah.
So we get on the flight. That's grand. Land over there. That's fine. Into the hotel. The rooms weren't ready, so that was fine. They said, oh, you can go in and have some breakfast. So we goes in to have some breakfast. Bearing in mind, we're tired.
Yeah.
My dad had passed away a couple of years previous and he used to love Dean Martin. And in the restaurant, Dean Martin is playing this, and here I am.
Oh, that was exciting.
Oh, my gosh. Right,
she's
seriously.
Like, she's like, oh, bye.
I know.
And I'm out there trying to
And then when
up.
We go to eat, we go to try to get some. Now, to be fair, I'm a lot better with food now than I would have been back then. But it was all like brioche rolls and glazed stuff and cheese. And I was going, I can't eat any of that. No normal bread. Anyway,
no sliced pan and butter.
No sliced pan or butter.
No kegels.
So anyway, so we said we'd get over that, right? Yeah. That was fine. So we went out. I think we went out for a walk around the place, right?
Yeah.
So he goes out for a walk and we had seen a sign from McDonald's. So it must be like early afternoon at this stage, right?
McDonald's. So you care they are initially.
Yeah, but I mean, you can see the sign from McDonald's. Come on, you're going to find it. We honestly walked the streets of Genoa for about 2 hours. We were up lanes, down lanes, around. And to me now, and I'm not saying this would still be my opinion, but at the time, the people were just so rude. Like, I was pointing at the golden arches, which is like a worldwide symbol, and they'd be like, no, and I was going, oh my God.
You'd probably get disgusted that you were choosing to go to the golden arches. Yeah.
So eventually we decided we would go into this other little restaurant because we gave up on finding McDonald's. We just could not find it, okay? Yeah. So we went into this restaurant and I was like, oh yeah, can we have some chips? And he kept giving me a packet of crisps.
Yeah.
So I'm like, no, chips, like French fries. Like, so that was fine. So I said, oh, do you know, I'll have a beef burger. A beef burger and chips.
Yeah.
How long can you go?
Like, the only way I can describe the beef burger was a lump of beef on the plate on a piece of bread. That was the beef burger.
Yeah.
And when the chips came out, I don't know of anybody. And back then, how I would, you know, when you used to use a chip pan and you'd put the chips into the aisle before the aisle was hot enough.
Like
so when they were made, coated. They were rotted. They were, that's exactly what I was handed. So of course I was crying that. I was like, I just can't eat that. Like, I can't eat it. So then poor Rob was like, oh my God, what am I going to do with this thing? Like, and I remember my heart and soul going, oh my God, like, you know, we were at home now. We'd be getting ready. It's a Friday night. We'd probably be going to the Blacker. We'd be doing whatever. Yeah, and I was going, what are we going to do here?
And I'm starving.
I'm starving. What are we going to do? So anyway, we goes back to the hotel, still starving. I think I actually got a packet of crisps, if the truth be known, at the end of our, at the rubber chips, probably had ice cream or something. And we went back to the hotel and I was trying to ring home.
Yeah.
No matter what I did, I couldn't get a number out. And they kept saying to me, that's the number, that's the number, that's the number. And I was going, nothing is working. Because your mobile phone wouldn't have worked in Italy back then. Like, you needed to use the landline. Yeah. So I couldn't get through to my mom. I couldn't get through to order. I couldn't get through to anybody, right? So eventually, I think I had a bat and Rob ordered up tea and toast or something to the room. Now, I don't even drink tea, but I drank a cup of tea because I was like,
fill you up.
I have to do something at this stage.
Oh
like,
God,
you and know. I think it was the next morning then I eventually got through to Audrey because I woke up and I said, right, let's be more positive, because people had said, oh, the train station is nearby the hotel and you can take yourself off for the day. Yeah, if you know how to speak Italian.
Yeah.
Or you're not like 19 years of age and having a clue.
I know.
Like,
yeah,
now a 19 year old now would be a lot more sensible and a lot more, you know, than what we would have been, kind of thing. Like, you know, I'd have known to go on a trip like with a tour operator where you had a rep and everything to look after you, and not like on a city break on your own. Like,
fresh.
So I was like, oh, look, we'll try, we'll go to the train station, we'll try to do what we can, we'll get
trying
there.
Trying to be positive.
Trying to be positive. Got through to Audrey. Bald. Absolutely bald. Me out. Hysterical. Audrey's like, oh my God, what's wrong? What's wrong? What's wrong with that? So she was like, right, you're coming home, you're coming home, you're coming home. I think Audrey might have got on to you then, Matt.
I got the phone call. I was like the solver of all problems.
Yes.
So I had Audrey on, who was also crying because she'd spoken to Julie, and then Julie was so upset.
Oh my God.
Yeah. And she was traumatized. And here's Audrey. She can't even eat. And I was like, no, I said, she's in Italy.
Wouldn't have done me any harm, in fairness.
I couldn't understand. I was like, she's in Italy, gorgeous foods. You know, the weather's probably amazing.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. So Audrey's like, no, we have to get her home. We have to go. So I was like, okay, what are we going to do? So thankfully there was a flight.
There was a flight back to London.
Yeah.
And, but then I remember when we got to the airport, it was just saga after saga. Yeah. Cause I knew, like, Rob was like, this thing is not for real. Like, you know, like, God love him. Like, you know, going on your fourth holiday and you're going home like 24 hours later. But when we got to the airport, when we had left the day previous, this is, bearing in mind, this is when you had tickets and you'd coupons.
Yeah. Yeah.
The person had taken the two coupons instead of one coupon.
Yeah,
so I actually had no return flight because the person at check-in had taken the two
both
coupons.
Yeah.
So as it turned out then, I had to pay for a new flight home and everything. I think, Mags, that landed on your desk
trying
to get a refund on that then, and then got the flight to London, and
she was rescued. She was
rescued.
But if I can, just non-Ryanair related, Jenny, please tell them about you and Rob when you went and had a curry that time.
No.
I didn't hear that.
It was the first time we were going out for a meal, right?
You shouldn't have done any firsts and together, by the sounds of
it. Honest to God. Well, I think Rob's mom had booked it for us, and yeah. I think it was the Pagoda restaurant in Sutton Cross. No. I think it was called the Pagoda.
I remember the one in Sutton Cross. It was near. Do you know the one? I went secondary up there.
Yeah, so it was there anyway. So, of course, nowadays the kids go out for Chinese and go to restaurants. Yeah. Like, we wouldn't
it's
have really been.
Nature to them.
We'd have had a jazz.
Stop excusing yourself. Come on, tell the story.
We'd have had a jazz in the house and stuff like that. But, we wouldn't have been out to restaurants, really. Do you know what I mean? But anyway, Rob ordered this duck, right?
Okay.
So that's
aromatic
fine.
Duck.
Aromatic duck. So the duck comes out. So there's the meat and there's the veg.
Yeah.
And there's this wooden box on the table. So I'm going, all right. So just, I think, I'm assuming Rob had the duck. I don't know. So he ate the duck, ate the carrots, ate whatever it was. And then Rob, anyone that knows Rob knows he's a messer. And he kept going, that's a snake in that box. A snake is going to come up out of it. And I was like, oh, shut up. Yeah, as if it's a snake, you know. And then he was like, actually, I think they're face cloths.
Sorry, what? So, how did I not hear this before?
So at the end of the meal, now bearing in mind, everything is eaten. And the girl is clearing the table.
My God,
the girl is clearing the table and was like, Rob, sorry, what are they? And she was like, oh, they're the pancakes for your duck.
I wish he would have wiped his face. I didn't let him, but you know him, he would have if he'd been allowed. Oh my God.
Anyway, this is a podcast not about me, MILF.
Right, so we bring it back then to some of the other trips that we went on. So the one that stands out
press
for me
trips.
Was the press trip that we went on to
Sardinia, I think.
It was two new routes. It was Sicily, Sardinia.
I went to France. We on the plane with one. The cracked window.
Okay,
I'll tell you that. You tell yours first.
So we went over and it was loads of press. It was basically the first time MOL dropped travel agencies' commission to 5%.
Oh God, remember the scandal?
Yeah. So that was the big scandal. And we went. So you, Leslie came.
No, it was both.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
It was actually both of them. Yeah, because definitely Leslie Kane was there. And Paul Long. And was Darren on that one with us?
I think Darren was with us.
Anyway, so we got there.
Was Kenneth with us as well? I don't know if Kenneth was with us.
No.
Darren definitely was.
Darren definitely was. Kenneth was.
Wild Kenneth probably wasn't allowed on a press route.
Probably wasn't allowed, no.
Paul Long shouldn't have been allowed on a press route.
Yeah, that's true. Any trip.
The thing about it is you're on a press trip.
Yeah.
So it's like the drinks are flowing.
Sitting in the first press trips, all of us together, we were grand with that, an Italian travel agency group.
Appeared.
Burst through the doors, start screaming and throwing vegetables and all. I think there was no.
Really, I don't remember that.
Start throwing stuff out at us and everything. And I was like,
we're under attack.
Like screaming in Italian and everything like that. So it was a pretty tough press conference. Yeah. It was. So then that night, then we were flying to Sardinia then. So we flew to Sardinia. And with that, then Party Central.
Yeah.
Park Central here. They were in swimming pools.
Oh, my God. The hotel was actually a beautiful hotel and it was right beside the beach and there was a pool, but it just went
haywire.
People in the pool.
I remember hearing this. I didn't go on that trip. Yeah.
I'm screaming. I remember you were all in the pool. I'm screaming my heart out.
I 100% wouldn't have been in the pool.
No, but you were down 100%. You were down there drinking and other people were in the pool. I won't say who, but other people were in the pool and I was down screaming at people to get out of the pool because obviously we were flying very early the next day.
So we had the press conference the next morning because that's when we were all asleep.
So then we were at the press conference. Before the press conference, we were sitting there and Paul was on the wall. And me, you and Paul and Paul Long. Oh my God, we're sitting there. Paul's sitting at the wall, absolutely hungover because 1 hour of sleep, right?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden, I turned around and Paul was gone. He was gone. He was actually falling asleep. And because he's so tall,
he fell over the wall. The back of us,
and none of us knew where he was until she looked over the wall. And she goes, oh my God, Paul, are you all right? And he got up off the wall.
Dazed and confused.
Like, seriously, didn't give a shit. And then we went into the press conference.
We all had our glasses.
And we
dying.
And we were all sitting there. And I was all right. And Leslie Jones. I was terrified.
Yeah. I was all right, ringleader.
No, I was terrified of flying at the time. So I was like, work for Ryanair, terrified of flying. But I remember the elbow came down the line. Do you remember?
Yeah.
Wake him up. He started to snore. Paul Long started to snore. And O'Leary's on the stage doing the press conference and all this. And you could just hear.
We're all in rugby jerseys
as well. In a rugby
representing company.
And when you're seeing the elbow come down from the side, and the elbow went down, I think about 10 times, and all of a sudden you just heard.
Waking himself up. Oh my God.
But me and her especially, we were in absolute stitches. But I remember then coming home from that, and he said the Irish and UK press had drank something like £800
back then. That was scandalous. Yeah.
Scandalous on the flight.
Yeah.
On the two flights, the flight out and the flight back. But it was just, I remember when Paul Long went over that wall and we couldn't find him for like a whole 10 seconds. And then we realised he was over the wall.
Because the night before and all, he was like, I'm going to not, he found out, I think, what room MOL was staying in and what room
people were in,
and he was knocking on the doors and I was like, you are not
P45 for
like,
us tomorrow.
If you remember, like Leslie was pretty scary, like, do you know what I mean? Like, now I was fairly lucky because she kind of liked me. She only kind of trend me with gluing me to the chair. That's the only thing I was kind of trend with, being glued to my chair.
But yeah, I remember she said the next morning that someone was banging down our door at 5 o'clock in the morning.
Yeah,
it probably was. He probably snuck out of bed and decided to go wild.
He was mad.
No, I wasn't on the trip. I was on. Wasn't overnight, but it was Carcassonne and Saint-Étienne in France. So Dickie was on my flight, so you can imagine, right? So like that, there was alcohol involved and everything. But we were actually really sensible. There wasn't loads of us. I think there was only 20. So it wouldn't have been a big gang.
Yeah.
And that would have included the press that were coming on the flight as well. So we went over anyway. We landed. I don't know which airport we went to first, and it was fine. And when we arrived, they kept saying, but where is your president? You know, and we were like, are they talking about presidents?
Yeah.
So they were actually talking about Michael O'Leary. So I was like, oh, Michael. And they were like, yeah. And I was like, no, that's him. Because he just had his rugby shirt on. So he wasn't, they expected like a suit and tie and shirt.
Yeah.
So I was like, that's him. And then, no, we're looking for the president. And I was like, that's him, you know? Yeah. So they were like, anyway, so it was in the airport. We didn't actually leave the airport and it was full of military police and we'd never seen that. In Ireland, there was no guns or anything like that. So we were absolutely terrified. So that was grand. We had that press conference. He did what he had to do. And then we'd get back on the flight and go to the next airport. So we did that and everything was grand. Took off and we were coming home. That's when the disaster started. So we took took off anyway. And then a few minutes later, I could see a bit of panic going on. And I was like, what's happening here? And there's lots of, you know, talking on the flight or whatever. And next minute, when I looked up properly, my oxygen mask was down in front of me, right? So then I looked around and everyone's oxygen mask had dropped, okay? So what I didn't realise when everyone's like, put on your mask, put on your mask. I didn't realise when you put them on, you didn't actually feel the oxygen.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And Dickie didn't either, right? The pair of us, I swear to God. So I said, I don't think mine's working innocently like that,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Dickie went, mine's not working either. So he just went into a full meltdown, right? But his mask not working, okay? So they made an announcement that one of the windows in the plane, the cockpit had cracked, but yeah, there was two. So if it didn't get any worse, we were flying. If it did, we'd have to make an emergency landing.
Oh,
I think it was in Paris or somewhere like that. So Dickie is in full like hysterics at this stage, okay? And he's sucking on the mask and he's like, it's not working, it's not working. Right, so Michael had to get up off his seat and come down and calm him, right?
Oh my God.
Like, you don't feel it and blah, blah, blah. Now, in fairness, he was so good.
Yeah.
But anyway, we got off the flight. Now, I have to say, I'm not a nervous flyer, but that was scary. So we got off the flight anyway, and poor Dickie, I don't know who was with him or who was going home with him or whatever, but I remember he had to go to the pub like to have a drink. A drink several, like the next day. He was like, oh, Max, you shouldn't have left me. And I was like, Mike, what happened to you? I said, something else happened to you. He said, oh, we just went to the pub for one. And he said, oh my God, I don't even remember getting home. Like, but I think the nerves had gotten to him.
Yeah.
You know, but then I kept saying, oh God, is this going to be a big scandal in the papers now, you know, about the aircraft? But seemingly it was something common. And
I thought
blah,
it was
blah,
going to be a big scandal in the who was drinking the pill, but we won't talk about it. And then like taking it back to the office and all the things, like, so we were saying that we use off mic earlier on, we're having just a little chat between us about the awards that we had.
They were the best
monthly awards. I think it was a month
on a Friday.
I think it'd be the last Friday
of every month. You were right,
and the drinks would be brought in, and like crisps and the popcorns and peanuts. Then you do the awards and then the social committee, which, like, we actually had some fantastic events. We used to have them up in the Garda Club and stuff like that.
Remember
some of the events up
Nancy
there?
Nancy Hams pub down the road.
The awards, I think it'd be the top seller, the top team
of everything, wasn't it? Top car hire, all that.
But you even remember like the one year, the Christmas party. And there was a competition for a limo.
Oh, we won that.
We won the limo.
Yeah.
Yes. You won the limo, didn't you? And you brought us.
We won. We'd write a story about.
I couldn't tell you what it was for.
And I wrote it. And then in the end, we were picked. But because we lived near each other, we shared the limo. But you remember that night? So
that was great, crack.
That was in the National Show Centre.
That was a great night.
Brilliant night because the limo picked us up.
Yeah.
And then when we got out of the limo, remember they'd arranged and they'd all the people in the white suits up on
the movie stars.
Like we were celebrities.
Yeah. And you went in and it was on the big screen. The entrance.
Yeah.
But that was the night that the pilots, it was actually one of the first
everyone was together.
And I remember then we'd have nights out just in the Garda Club, other than the ones we had sent.
Stayed in that Garda Boat Club as well. It was a kip.
And I remember one time
we had barbecues and all.
Yeah, we had barbecues and then they'd say to you,
not that we'd eat much.
Yeah, Leslie Kane and Leslie Jones and Daryl.
Yeah, Daryl
would be all in a corner, and then they'd come on the mic and they'd go, right, we've got 20 blue tickets.
Yeah,
to do. So everyone has to.
You'd make a show of yourself just for tickets.
You just do it. And I remember I took a one. And then I remember, and Paul wasn't working in Ryanair at the time then, my husband, and Kenneth Clark gave me poppers.
Oh, God.
And he had me in the toilet sniffing poppers. And I'd never done like that. I didn't know what it was. I would do whatever he'd say to me, but I remember he did it. And I remember on the payphone ringing Paul and saying to Paul, on the payphone, ringing his ma's house and going, oh my God, Kenneth Clark to give me poppers. And he went ballistic. And I was like, I know, money mess, and he didn't.
Yeah.
You know when you do that? I was like, he didn't. And he was like, oh, tell Kenneth Clark. And then I remember Kenneth Clark as well. Do you remember he came up to me one day and he was, his eyes were so red and his nose was running and all. And I said to him, oh my God, what's wrong? And he said, nothing. He said, shush, shush. And he opened a bottle of Vicks, you know, the tub of Vicks up your nose, and took the ting out of it and rubbed it all over my face.
Oh, so we could go home safe?
Yeah, and my eyes were screaming and my nose was screaming. And Elaine was like to me, oh my God, Kenneth Clark just has the same thing. There must be something in the office. And it wasn't.
The two of you skipped home, I'd say.
We skipped home because he gave you that. But the nights out that we had and the Nancy Hans. So talk about I shot the sheriff that night. That was
gaff. That was Halloween night. Halloween. Well, we basically had a fancy dress in work.
In the office, didn't we? Yeah.
Yeah. So everybody had to come into work dressed up, or you brought your costume image. I can't even remember what I dressed up as, can you?
I don't even know what I dressed up as.
I think I was at a leaving early that night, because I think I was at a leaving. Yeah.
Okay. So anyway, we're all dressed up in work all day. So that was grand. So then before, as we always did, like, we weren't going to have enough alcohol when we actually went out.
Yeah.
So we drinks in the canteen, first of all. So we finished up our shift and we went downstairs, and there was a big group of us. So there was all of us. There was Michelle. And then who was the guy that actually did it?
I don't know who.
He was dressed as the Matrix. Like, he was dressed as Keanu Reeves from the Matrix. So he had the long black leather coat. He had the black boots. Now, in fairness, he looked brilliant, the glasses and all things. But he had this gun for the day as a prop. Okay. So of course we're down in the canteen, and we had one or two drinks. We weren't drunk at this stage. So we're sitting down in the canteen. So Michelle comes in anyway, and we're laughing and we're messing anyway. So next minute she grabs your man's gun out of his hand, aims it at Darren and goes, poo, like this, but it was actually a pellet gun and we didn't know, and it was loaded. Now, can I just say, it skimmed him, didn't it?
Yeah.
Skim.
Yeah.
Right. So Darren,
the worst person to
Darren
it.
Went into full meltdown.
Oh, proper meltdown.
I've been shot was the first thing. Okay.
Yeah.
So Michelle, God love her, nearly died of a heart attack because she was like, oh my God, is this a real gun? So the guy who owned it was like, no, it's a pellet gun. I didn't realize it was loaded anyway.
Did it bounce off his glasses?
It was
the corner of his eye. Yeah. Like, ricocheted off.
It was a scratch, kind of, wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Like, Julie and I had to attend to him, and I swear to God, he was hysterical. Okay. So I was like, calm down. So somebody said, give him another drink. So Darren would have drank vodka at the state at that time. So we gave him another vodka. So that was grand. But then I was noticing like he was lashing the vodka into him.
Oh,
so I was like, now Darren, slow down. Like, we've the whole night to go.
Yeah.
This is probably about 6 o'clock in the evening. So he's like, oh my God, I was shot in him. I got him in my mirror. I said, Darren, it's a graze. You're still I could have lost my eye.
Yeah, and as the night went on,
on all night.
Because we went to Nancy Hands then.
Right? So every time, Julie and I were trying to take the drink away from him.
Yeah.
Rob was picking
us up. Rob came in to collect us.
Yeah.
And God, I ended up having to ring him and come earlier.
So every time we looked, Darren had a new drink in his hand. Julie and I were in a sweat. I don't think we drank anymore.
I don't think so.
We were looking after him. He's still going on. So this is how we nicknamed him, I Shot the Sheriff, okay? So he's absolutely bloobies. He's telling the story to everyone. And I could have lost my eye. So at this stage, he's not even making sense anyway. So I think you did have to ring Rob. So Rob said, I'm not leaving the car right there. So come on. I'm just coming in to let you know I'm here. So we were like, grand, yeah, grand. We're going again. So Rob said, oh my God, look at Darren. So I sat in the back with him. So we got him to his house. The condition
you must
that
have been staying in my house. Then.
I was
you
staying in your
been,
house, yeah. I think we rang the bell and ran.
I should probably, quite possibly.
At that stage now, we were
fuming.
We
had enough, like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it was traumatic with him. But and
now, he might
still
have a different version of it.
But, like, he was still talking about it. That next week in work, wasn't he?
He still talks about it now.
Yeah. Another mental night, wasn't it?
Splits competitions.
I never did the splits.
That was Darren.
Yeah.
You'd be in the bar, in a club, and all of a sudden Darren would be in the splits on the ground beside you.
Yeah.
No, but Rebecca,
that's our baton twirling days.
You see, where this comes back to, right, this will just determine how a night would be for us, right? So on a Friday night, we would go to the pod.
Yeah.
Now, before meeting Darren and anything or anybody like that, I don't really think I knew anybody that was gay before that. Like, you know, so on a Friday night, some Friday nights I'd actually drive to the pod and we'd go over and we'd drive. I'd still do like that. But this particular night I wasn't driving, and it was Ham, if you recall. I think it was once a month Ham used to be on, which was like the drag show.
Yeah.
So this was, I think this is where the splits and the high kicks came from, because they would be doing all
Divina
of this.
Divina Divine.
Yeah. So I remember this particular night, and I think me and Darren must have been in round. So I went to the bar, got a drink. I think we were drinking vodka and Red Bull.
Yeah.
Grand.
Staple drink for you guys.
Yeah. Bring back the drinks. Then Darren would go to the bar. I'd go to the bar. And at this time, whatever copious amounts of drinks later, both of us ended up at the bar together.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh no, I'll get them. I said, two vodkas. And he was like, vodkas? He's like, I must have been getting us JDs. And so I'd been buying vodka and Red Bull.
Drink JD.
And he was buying JD and Red Bull. And neither of us even realised we were drinking.
Yeah.
That will just tell you, like, because we were too busy doing splits competitions and high kicks.
Do you remember the night Kenneth Clark We were. Again, it was a live show. It must have been another night.
Steps, maybe?
No.
I didn't go to Steps,
and
thank
he was
God.
Shut up. Get out of my head.
Steps, mortified.
Get out of my head. He started doing, because then Kenneth got the job, and we're going forward, we're taking back. Kenneth got the job in the cabin crew, remember?
Oh, cabin crew.
Oh, God,
and
yeah.
He started to do, ladies and gentlemen. Remember, yeah. He started saying, prepare
the
doors.
Where was that? That was... I don't know.
I was on the floor rolling around laughing.
Hysterical. That particular night, I remember him when he was doing that. We were all laughing, like we were falling off chairs and all laughing.
Yeah,
that
we
night.
Were tumbling. Crazy.
I don't know what the night was, but like, because where was the venue that we used to go to, which is the one, which is bringing in the lads that from RD, where Anna fell through the bar and hurt our elbow. What was that venue?
Was it
the Palace, maybe?
Oh.
Did we used to go to the Palace? I don't think it was called the Palace, though, was it?
Was it on Camden Street?
I think it was the Palace. It's what's now the Palace, but it wasn't the Palace, I don't think.
But do you remember Anna? Anna and Amory.
Oh, my God, the pair of them. Like the RD accent. Yeah, we'd never heard the RD accent before in our lives.
And like, the
first day, I don't think we could even understand what they were saying.
We were like,
"Hi, you?
Yeah.
You're like, where are these from?"
They were mad. Like, Anna was just
crazy.
But I think they all rented up here as well, didn't they? They didn't go back to RD, so I think we'd be in their apartments and stuff as well.
Yeah, no, it was just whoever lived the nearest kind of to where we were. That's where you went back to, and everybody was invited. There was nobody was excluded. It was like, God love the person that owned the apartments.
Remember we went back to Darren's and Darren wasn't even there. he was home from Australia at one point, and we went and Anna was there and Anne-Marie and all, and me and you pulled up in a taxi and went into the house.
Yeah.
And his mum was
he wasn't even home. He wasn't even home.
Yeah,
and we were like, and he's like, our sister's upstairs. And I was like, okay. I remember we had a few drinks and I ended up coming home. I think he nearly killed me, Paul Kelly. But I remember just so many nights out.
You weren't there for the Queer as Folk night. Remember we were talking about that earlier on. So basically Queer as Folk was Aidan Gillen, the actor, was in it. And I think he's deadly. So anyway, it started, I think it was on Channel 4. And it was real controversial at the time.
Yeah.
So it was obviously about like gay men, I think, in particular. But so of course the lads were all like, oh, they're coming to Ireland, you know, for this night. We'd been down in Nancy Hands after work. Now, I had my Ryanair sweatshirt on, a pair of jeans. The hair was probably scraped back. There probably wasn't a screed of makeup on my face. So they were having a few drinks. And like that, we started doing the jugs of cocktails. So Darren kept saying, oh, we're going to this thing later. Should you come with us? And we were like, no, we're not going with you. We're not even dressed up. And he was like, it doesn't matter. Anyway, say about an hour and a half later, Darren and Kenneth convinced loads of us to go.
Oh my God.
So we all rocked up. So basically the actors from Queer as Folk were going to be there. So that was grand. So Paul was like, I've never even seen it. Most people hadn't even seen it. I'd been following it. So I knew what it was about. Paul had the breeze. Okay. Place was packed. It was like a sweat house, right? And I with the sweatshirt on me said to Darren, we're going to the loo. We'll be back in a few minutes. So walked into the toilets, packed, came out. And we were just washing our hands and we turned around and then there's this film crew in the toilets, right? Yeah. So next minute they're like, oh, has anybody seen the series Queer as Folk? So of course, no, all the girls are like, no. And Paul goes, my friend Nance has. So I was like, oh no.
Oh my God.
Right, so next minute, lights, cameras, action. The film crew are there.
In the toilets.
So the film crew started rolling, started asking us loads of questions. So anyway, blah, blah, blah. So Paul was like, oh, you know, pretending, nodding when I was talking anyway. So that was grand. We got through that anyway. They turned off the camera and they were like, yeah, no, this is for a TV program. And I was like, sorry, what now? And Paul was in fits laughing. Now, we never saw us. Thank God. I don't know whatever happened. Anyway, so we came back out and the lads were going mad. They were so jealous that we were after getting filmed, you know. So then suddenly they said, right, we're going to do loads of competitions.
Right.
Everybody to the front of the stage. So whatever way we were standing, we happened to be in the front row. So next minute the guy said, okay, the first person with a £20 note up in the air wins the whole series. But I happened to stick my hand in my pocket and I had £20 note. So I put my hand in the air with the £20 note. So the guy comes over to give me, congratulations, you've won. Well, next minute this fella behind me grabs me by the back of the hair, right? I want that. Blah, blah, blah. Starts reefing the head off me.
Oh,
so then, of course, Darren is like, leave my friend alone. You know, Paula then turned, whips around and she's like, get away from my friend. So there was like a tug of war and I was kind of like, here, you can have it, you know.
Yeah.
And she was not letting it go. It was just one of those random nights.
I remember when Paul got spiked in the pod. I remember one night we were there and I went into the toilet. We were all there. I don't know what happened. And then I went into the toilet and he came into the toilet with me because it was obviously unisex. And this guy went to kiss him.
Yeah.
And I was like, whoa. Bitch. And then we went back out and I remember he said to me, I'm not feeling great. And I was all right. And I said, I'm going to take him home. So we got outside.
Loads of people were getting spiked back then. Yeah.
And when I got him out, I literally had to get him to put one. We couldn't get a taxi. I remember walking
trying to get him to walk. Yeah.
Willing God
help
to
me.
Get me, to get him down. But he was very sick for days. You were spiked as well.
I was spiked years ago. And it was the first time I was ever staying in Kenneth's house. So I'd never met his parents before, right? Or his sisters. And my sister, Kira, who worked with us as well, she was on her honeymoon and I was due to pick her up. So it must have been the Friday night again.
Must be,
and I was due to pick her up on, say, the Saturday evening or the Sunday. So stayed in Kenneth's anyway. We went to the pods. That was grand. I felt okay in there. I wasn't too bad. But towards the end of it, I started feeling really, really sick.
Yeah.
And I wasn't drinking much that night. I don't know. I think because I had to pick Kira up.
Yeah.
So I obviously had my car in Kenneth's house. So, and I lived in Meath. I was down in Meath at that stage. So I wasn't living in Dublin anymore. So I would have had to drive. So I was probably conscious, you know, I have to drive and then I have to go to the airport and collect my sister. So anyway, I started feeling really sick and Kenneth don't feel well. And he was looking at me and goes, oh, you don't look great anyway. So he said, right, we'll get you home. So we came home. Well, I spent the whole night puking, right? And I was like, oh, God. And Kenneth was down the end of the bed, you know, minding me, you know, God love him. Like, so next minute he disappears in the morning and then he brings his mother to the bedroom,
oh,
right?
Oh, God.
So I'm like, oh, my God, she's going to kill me. She's going to think I'm a junkie or something. So she came in. She was, you know, absolutely gorgeous, lovely. Don't be worrying any. Oh, then she wanted to call the doctor. And I was like, oh, no, please now. I'll be grand. So managed to get myself out of bed. I still felt so ill. I remember driving home and I was like, how am I going to collect Kira? So it was the Sunday morning. She was flying in and I still wasn't well. So I remember texting our friend that morning and saying, I'm not able to go to the airport. Can you pick them up? My mum and dad were away. I don't know where they were. So I was in the house then in Meath by myself and I was terrified. I got like night terrors, the whole shebang from it. Oh, I was traumatised.
And then can we talk about Kent?
Yeah, our pal.
So talk about, because he was there way before me and you were in college with him, Julie. So talk about Kenny and being gay and didn't, you'd think that you were his girlfriend.
No.
Who was that?
No.
What was that?
So when I was in college with Kenny, and so bearing in mind, like, I mean, this is a good few number of years ago. Mm. So, like, I mean, we wouldn't have really known.
Not many people were outwardly gay.
Yeah. Like, do you know what I mean? Because obviously it wasn't as widely accepted and stuff like that as it is now, I don't think, anyway.
And you were so young. Like, I was a lot older than you guys.
Yeah, like, I was only in college. I was only like 17 or something. And I just would like, if you had somebody probably gay in your family, you would have known more about it, but I didn't. So I wouldn't have been overly familiar with it.
And you went to an all girls secondary school as well.
Yeah,
you weren't.
Yeah. So you weren't. Yeah.
And in college, like Kenneth would have been, you know, he would have been a real one of the quiet ones as such coming from secondary school.
That's hard to believe. Mm-hmm.
But do you know what I mean? Yeah. When, like, because obviously, my husband, Rob, went to school with Kenneth. And so when I ended up in college, I'd be like, oh, yeah, he's real quiet. Like because obviously in an all boys school and he was gay and he wasn't out there, he would have been really quiet. Like, we got on brilliant. Like, we
used to
have 17A to college and we had the best nights. But he had a girlfriend.
Yeah.
Right. And I remember
I never knew this.
We started in college, obviously all the Debs were coming around and he went to his Debs with his girlfriend. So when we kind of went to Ryanair then, obviously we'd all have different circles of friends because you were on your different teams and different things like
different
that.
Floors.
And you'd be spending a lot of the time with your team or who you were on lunch break with or who you were on shift with. So Kenneth became great friends with Darren, which as it turned out helped Kenneth to come out and admit that he was gay. And I think Darren played a big part in that.
He did.
I think he'd say that himself. But friends. I think he had come out though and he was gay. Which I think helped Kenneth realise. Yeah. Because Darren would have been a team leader and he would have been quite popular. And I think it kind of...
as well.
Exactly, yeah.
And I think it helped Kenneth kind of realise, well, hang on a minute, like if...
Yeah.
Darren can do it, yeah.
And so Mags...
Mags, you can tell the story. Oh God, if you
I'll never forget the day, right? So I was used to gay people, you know, and I knew the minute I met Kenneth, I was like, yeah, obviously he's gay.
Yeah.
Wouldn't say anything, but chatted anything. We'd all become really good friends. So never forget the day I was an admin and I'm sitting there and I'm doing my work and Julie comes over. I think I'd gotten up to get something. She was like, you're going to have to sit down for this. I have something to tell you. And I was like, oh my God. Like there's something after happening, something's after dying, right? Now she was dead serious.
Yeah.
Dead serious. And she was like, no, Mags, it's going to be a bit of a shock to you.
Well, hang on a second, yeah. Mags. Was it a shock to you?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Was it a this, real
oh my God, she had no idea.
You had no clue.
No.
So and in how my did mind, come out to you then?
I can't even remember, to be honest with you.
Like, it was in work when
I think
did.
It was just in work one day. I think it was this yeah. same day that you told me.
Okay, so she came up to you.
So anyway, she's like, you're going to have to sit down. Like, you're going to be really shocked. So I'm waiting for her anyway. And she's, and you know the way Julie always sells everybody's second name?
Yeah.
Like, even if she'd been talking about my sister to me, she's like, and Ciara Penrose said, you know. Yeah. So anyway, and she goes, hand in the air. And she's like, Kenneth Clark is gay. Well, exactly that reaction. I just burst out laughing and I was like, yeah. And she's like, what do you mean, yeah? And I was like, but I know he's gay. But you couldn't know he's gay because you only have to tell me, right? And I was like, but no, it's obvious. And the poor, I had to nearly put her sitting down. She was like, I can't believe it. But he had a girl. And that's why, because he kept saying to me, but he had a girlfriend, you know? And she was like, we went to college together. You know, we was in school with Rob and blah, blah, blah. And I was, she was like, but you never told me he was gay. And I was, but I probably presumed maybe everybody knew him. It was just something that wasn't spoken about.
Yeah.
So I would have obviously just gone along with everything. And, you know, he was such a good friend. Like, he was absolutely crazy, but yet he had such a sensitive and soft side about him. You know, he was a mammy's boy. His mother has him, had him spoiled rotten.
So she rang in every day and that was the joke on the floor.
Yeah.
Here's Helen.
Yeah.
What's Kenna having for dinner today?
Yeah.
And he was demanding what he was having.
And I was like, you're a poor mom. Yeah. Helen was and is a saint.
Yeah.
But he's, and then when I remember meeting his mom after I had my episode after the pod and was finally like not embarrassed to come back to the house. And been there for dinner with the family and everything. Like, he's so like his mom.
Yeah.
I was like, you're the image. Stop saying I'm the image of my mom. And I said, but you are, because they had the exact same personality, full of life, you know, great fun. I'd say friends with everybody.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think they, Kenneth definitely doesn't have a mean bone in his body. Didn't.
No. And I
think Helen doesn't, I don't think either.
He was the first person, probably after you. He was the very first troublemaker I ever met in my life.
Yeah. And that wasn't yourselves.
That wasn't like us. Like,
yeah, but you used to be crawling under the desks and tiddling people's legs and all when they were on the calls. Like,
he'd ring me and he'd be like, I'm late, I'm on the bus. And I'd be like, I'd be up at an admin. You're going to have to get my headset and log me in and take calls. And I was like, so I'd have to run down to his desk, log him in, and then trying to take a few calls while he was running from the bus stop into work.
And for a laugh, and for a joke, he would do anything.
Yeah.
He'd do anything for the laugh. Like, and as I said, he'd crawl along desks and then you'd go to go back to your
desk.
Well,
the two of you, not only him.
Yeah.
And then, the two of you, in fairness.
He wasn't innocent.
No.
You'd sit there or I'd sit there and I'd be on a call and you had to be under my desk for 10 minutes.
You wouldn't know he was
and
there.
I wouldn't know. And he'd jump out at me or he'd just do stupid. Do you remember he used to do like, he'd be on a call or doing schedule changes. Schedule changes was the worst.
Oh, I hated it.
In the world.
He gets savaged by
and
every customer.
Get lashed over and you're at the window, pitch dark.
Yeah.
And you turn around and all of a sudden
his face would be mushed.
His face is mushed to the window. Or he's doing,
because there was the big windows that used to open and he used to just be literally standing in the window doing Superman and all or something.
And he'd do high kicks. He'd come up to your desk and start doing high kicks while you were on the phone. Do you remember the time? And he was there as well, wasn't it, that the pilot went on strike and that was horrendous. We were worried about
that. I remember we all had to work and it was crazy because the pilots were going on strike. So literally everything had to be cancelled and, you know, people would be screaming and shouting at you. That's and we were all working till like 10 and 11 o'clock at night. And this particular night was the night before the strike was due to happen. And as it turned out, the taxi men went on strike at Dublin Airport the same time. I'll never forget.
Double whammy.
We were in Cunningham Road in our office. MOL came in. We were actually getting pizzas. He stood up on one of the desks, thanked us all for all of our hard work. But the pilots realised there wouldn't have been enough room on the roundabout for them and the taxi men, so they weren't striking.
Yeah.
In his jeans and rugby.
In his jeans and rugby shorts.
And he was God. Yeah. He was God to us at the time.
Oh my God.
We were all like, oh my God. And I remember, so then we had to, so everyone we rang to cancel their flights, we had to ring back them all and offer them their flight back. And you got even more lashed out by them.
Yeah.
But I remember we got a £25 Jervis voucher for everyone he came in and asked. So
which was loads of money at the time. Money.
And he said, and a bunch of flowers for your mammies. And I think it was one of
the generous days.
Yeah, that Kenneth was doing the whole deliver. I think that was one of the
nights. He always waited for like a stressful time.
I know, he was always at it. But I just think that, you know, as a friend, he was just...
Yeah. You often wonder what he'd be like now.
Yeah.
You know, if he was still alive, you'd say, oh.
Still crazy.
Yeah, I think he would be still. Yeah.
Like me, him, and actually Veronica Hearn went down to my sister's house in London one time and everything. And like he had us at raves and all.
Yeah.
Like, and he found it, like this was a rave in like
the middle of nowhere.
The middle of nowhere. And like my sister, Audrey Godlover, came and collected us at like 3 o'clock in the morning.
Poor Audrey, she don't
drive. I think it was about an hour's drive away. Yeah, warehouse, all, like,
But do you remember Kenneth left and got a job in flying.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And wasn't he flying with Brian Dowland at one point? I think so.
Yeah. Yeah, I think he was when Brian was
together. Yeah. He was flying with Brian at one time. Yeah. And he came back to us.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Do you remember he came back into FRG and the thing?
Yeah.
But he was such a character and he was like one of the many characters. But he's the one I think that just stays with us all because obviously we lost him so young.
Yeah.
But it was just gas. And his parents were just lovely.
Yeah, and his sisters.
And every one of us, though, would still be in close contact with his mum. Like, I know his mum and dad came to my wedding.
Yeah.
And they went to Anna's wedding.
Yeah, we go and see them now when Darren's home, when he comes home from Australia. I do bring
and
them
always down to the grave. And I just say it every time we're down that grave. And one, I never find it. And I'm like, I know it now. Yeah, but he's pissing himself laughing at me.
Well, look at her looking for me. Yeah.
And then the Ryanair planes obviously
fly over.
Go over. Like, you know what I mean? So I just think that I think that was the very first tragedy in my life. I know your dad had passed, Julie, but I think for us to lose a friend.
Yeah. And so young.
And I think maybe that's probably why we actually did all remain so good friends. Yeah. Do you know what I mean with it as well? So we're coming up to the end here. So how did that end? Who was there when it ended?
They started to centralise things.
Yeah,
and I think it must have been just
around then. So I moved to head office then.
You'd wonder whatever happened to the building.
My takeaway memories, one, obviously the big one is going to be Kenneth. My second one would be just the drive over and the singing of the songs.
We used to sing the Whitney Houston song.
We put it on and
we actually think, who was that she sang?
You'll have to get a clip of that for this.
Same script, different cast. Is that the name of the song?
Yeah.
Same script, different cast. But Barbara Streisand.
Yeah. But we actually thought we were them too in the car.
And we'd sing and we'd go over and back and forth.
I could imagine the two of you.
We just had some laughs and obviously the night out. What was your biggest memories from it, Mags?
I suppose friends. The friends that I made, like, as you know, I'm nearly friends, I'd say, with everybody still. Yeah, so
even people that we wouldn't be friends with,
I still try and keep in contact. I mean, the amount of weddings that I went to from Ryanair as well. So it was just, I suppose, and it was probably the first time that it gave me like a solid working foundation, you know, for working for like, it would have been one of the biggest companies in Ireland at the time, as in the airline, you know, but we really were at the forefront of travel industry. Mm. So even like I have friends in America and they were like, oh my God, we love Ryanair over here because MOL was so controversial and he just did what he wanted. But he always look, Aer Lingus followed all suit of what Ryanair did. Mm. Like at the beginning, it was like, oh, we'll never do that. But then they have the same rules.
Yeah.
So he really did revolutionize and, you know, although he was, you know, a bit eccentric and quite controversial, he was a hard worker, Michael. Yeah. Like he is a hard worker. He does lots for charity as well. So I think, I suppose, the foundation of working in Ryanair is such a great thing. Friendship was probably the biggest, though. The biggest thing.
The biggest
from
thing.
From it, yeah, for
what
me.
What was yours, Julie?
I think, like, the training and the experience, you know, that was... I'd had different jobs. Like I'd worked in the Sheaf of Wheat and I'd worked in the UCI, but like that was like a proper
job. That was your proper job.
Like that was my first proper job. And then to be able to go through the different ranks within the job, like, and to be so young, like, and be having these responsibilities.
Oh, that's a great opportunity.
Do you know what I mean? Like, so then the friendship, like, I mean, you know, the likes of Mags, Darren, obviously I'd have been friends with you, Rebecca, but Mags, Darren, Lynn, like even Anna, all, as you said, through social media, like I'd still be friends with a lot of them. Like,
And I think I remember one of the ladies in the trap said to me, if you can work for Michael O'Leary, you can work for anyone.
Yeah.
But I think it was a very, very different Ryanair back then. On that note, girls, we leave it there. We definitely need to have a reunion because just the memories. And I hope that anyone out there listening who did work on Ryanair or who worked with you, Mags, or who worked with me, worked with you, Julie, that they have their own stories. And I think even talking about a workplace, we all have that one job, but actually we've quite a few jobs that you just had the best mates
and the best crack. Yeah.
And so thank you very much, Marguerite.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, Julie.
Thank you.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.